Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How's your smart home? Your new, you moved into a new house? Well, not a new house.
I mean,
new to you,
you know,
house.
A year ago now, but yeah.
Uh-huh. And have had all sorts of smart home adventures, and you wrote this week about some of your... I feel like this is like get the knives out now before matter arrives, kind of.
Well, yeah, thing. And you and Mike talked a bit about this on Upgrade too. So I've been doing a lot of smart home stuff for a while. I appreciate some of the stuff Apple's doing, but I feel like sometimes they miss the like trees for the forest. I don't know, the other direction. They miss some of the details. Like, I'm glad they're doing this overhaul. I'm very curious about it because they make this comment on the feature pages for all the platforms, like, oh, there'll be a new underpinning to the home app coming later this year, and it will improve reliability and this stuff. And it's like, that sounds really promising. Like, because again, as I said in my piece, like, kind of my nitpicks aside, reliability is the biggest problem in smart home stuff. And HomeKit, as much as I love it, it is occasionally incredibly unreliable. Like, you know, anybody's ever seen the updating or not responding things on their tiles, and you're just like, well, what's the point? What's the point if I can't count on this button to turn the light on and off, right? Like, why am I then not just using a light switch?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, also adding Siri into the mix there is, I think, also a mess. Somebody commented to me afterwards that I was too easy on it, and especially mentioned that, like, Siri will tell you, like, a device is not responding, and then the thing will happen anyways.
Yeah.
Which I've definitely seen. I had that last night. Like, I tried to turn on lights in the bedroom, and it's like the first take from my, I often use Siri for my Apple Watch when I'm doing that. And it was like, oh, there's a problem when remotely connecting to your home. I'm like, okay, well, you're in the home, so you shouldn't have to remotely connect. And then I just did it again. It's like, oh yeah, it works fine. And it's like, okay. So again, it'd be like if you went in and had to flip your light switch like three or four times and be like, well, this is annoying. Why am I doing this? But that aside, I do think there are places where Apple has really kind of missed a step in terms of its ability to provide features for smart home tech to make it compelling and interesting for people to use. And one of them I mentioned was this issue with the smart home hubs that I'm interested about because I think Matter may obviate some of that problem because it changes the whole structure of how smart home devices communicate. So that's good because right now the smart home hub thing where it's like, okay, you have several devices on your network that could act as a hub, and we're just going to decide for you at any given time what should be your hub. And you're like, okay, thanks, I guess. But then you end up with weird situations like I had a screenshot of where every single hub device I have is in standby mode. And none of them are running anything because they're all like, oh, I thought you were doing it.
You were doing it, yeah.
It's like
It's
those blooper videos from baseball where the ball drops in the middle of three outfielders. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what? That's just annoying. And it feels like this is another classic case of Apple deciding it can be smarter than a person just picking something. And it's like, well, we don't want people to have to pick things because that's just a lot of overhead. And it's like, but actually that would be better in this case. And then my other complaint is a bigger complaint about, I think, utility, which is this idea of automation. And Apple does make the smart home automation stuff very easy. I appreciate that it has sort of like, here's your step through wizard. Pick your, you know, you pick your device that's triggering, pick your condition. And like the conditions are pretty good. Like I had no problem. Like, oh, I want to make this automation where it checks the temperature in my kid's room and lets me know if it gets over a certain temperature. And I was like, all right, here's the sensor that's in there. Great. Here's the threshold. Perfect. And then I was just really let down. It was like, well, there's no way it can just let me know this. Like, the only options were setting scenes. Mm-hmm. So I guess I could turn the lights on in my room if the temperature is too hot in his room, and that would wake me up, but that seems terrible. And or making the speaker in my room play something, which also seems bad. Mm-hmm. Why can't I just get an alert on my phone? That seems like a really sensible thing, right? And it's just not possible. And it baffles me because we have all this great automation technology and shortcuts that can do a lot of this stuff. And for some reason, home automation and shortcuts automation look similar but are totally separate.
Yeah.
And that's so weird. I don't understand that.
Well, I think one of the reasons is that they didn't, on these home hubs, they have chosen, or perhaps the hardware isn't good enough, to not implement shortcuts. right?
Right.
Because you'd need that. That's what you'd need to do. But this is leads to a frustration, which is that those shortcut-esque automations that you could do in the home app are so limited. And I understand, like, you're using third-party apps and stuff is not a thing that you could do with shortcuts running on an Apple TV or a HomePod or something. Like, I get it. I get that. But, like, even some of the built-in actions are not there, and the built-in actions should be better, and they're not. And I don't know whether this is a thing that Apple needs to improve, or whether, you know, that, does Thread or does the Matter stuff make it less relevant because devices can talk to each other? I don't really know where we end up, but it's so frustrating now, because that happened with my, I have a door sensor and a smart lock, because my new smart lock doesn't have a door sensor. And what I want to do is make it smarter about auto locking after a delay. And one of the things I wanted to do is not auto lock if the door is open, because that's then you try to close the door and the lock's in the way and it's very bad. And I first off, I have to put a delay, because you don't want it to be like, oh, well, when the door closes, lock the door, because you might want to go back out. So you want to put a delay on it. So you add in a delay and it adds a second. And if you want it to be 2 minutes, guess what? Tap that plus button 120 times. Because that's the only way you can change the time, is by pressing the plus button to add a second to the delay.
Oh my goodness.
And then I do all of this and I test it and it works, and then I say, okay, great, let's make it an automation, and then it just doesn't work. So it's like, okay, I don't know what's happening. I don't understand it. So fortunately my lock has an auto lock of its own, but like, I really want my lock, and maybe Matter will let me do this down the road, but like, I really want my lock to know that there's a door sensor there and for them to talk to each other, and that it is not happening right now.
Yeah, the one, this feature I found, you know, I mentioned this in my piece, but this feature that is just the weirdest thing is this. You scroll to the bottom of, by default, when you set up a home automation, it's like, all right, pick your thing and then pick a scene or another smart home device to control. But there at the bottom, there's this button that says convert to shortcut. I don't entirely understand what this thinks it's doing, because if you tap that, it will create what looks like a shortcut with an action in there about that's like a HomeKit action, but it doesn't import any of the stuff you just did.
Right.
It's like it's like the action that happens when the trigger happens, which is great. But what's weird about it is the fact that it has this incredibly bizarre assortment of apps and actions associated with it, because it doesn't have action, like it doesn't have access to everything that shortcuts can do. But like, there's like weird things where it's like, oh, contacts. Why do you need contacts in here? Like, there's no ability to just be like, show an alert, right, on your phone. But there is the ability to like get this artist information from iTunes Store. What?
I feel like you really have hit on one of the big missing pieces in Apple's automation and home automation strategy, which is for years now, if you wanted to send yourself a push notification or something, you have to use a third-party app that like Pushover that does that.
Yep.
And I do that. And it's like I should be able to automate, both in the home automation and in regular shortcuts, the ability to send a push notification, not just to myself on a particular device or to all my devices, but also, I would say, to anybody in my family group.
Yep, agreed.
And it just they just like, nah, we're not gonna do that. I don't get it, because there's so much value in being able to say, when this happens, notify me. But so much of it, and you can do it on device, but on device is not the same. And even on device, it's limited. But on device is not the same as I'm running this shortcut. I set it up on my iPhone. But I'm not using my iPhone right now, and so just push it to all my devices, and it just doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, I think what's fascinating about that is that like it does this feature, this convert to shortcut feature, it feels incredibly like, oh, there were two teams. There's the shortcuts team, and there's the HomeKit team, and they are two totally different teams.
Right.
And somebody was like, well, we can sort of implement this, but we're limited because, you know, like you said, with stuff that can only run on. Although, HomePods and stuff, well, you can run shortcuts off them. I don't know. Anyways,
I don't know.
It felt like somebody was like, "We'll just throw in some code to like kind of glue them together." But yeah. Oh, we should lock this down. And felt, like, you're like, but nobody. There should be one team that's doing both of those. Honestly,
it feels to me like they punted and they said, "Okay, well, more complex automations. We're going to hand that off to the shortcuts team." And they handed it to the shortcuts team and said, "Okay, here's what you can do, but it's super limited." And they're like, "Okay." And so they created like this subset of shortcuts that's not particularly useful. It's better than nothing. I mean, I have an automation that actually does seem to work, where it basically fires off and says, and it's a home automation, it says it looks at a sensor and looks at the temperature threshold and then turns on a fan, and that actually works. Mm-hmm. And that is implemented with mm-hmm. with shortcuts. Mm-hmm. but you're right, it's so disconnected. And this comes back to Matter coming out next month, which is what I would really like to believe is that some of our frustrations with Apple's home stuff have been because they're not trying to implement new stuff in their at their home layer because they know it's getting replaced or superseded by Matter, at which point, you know, like in November, Apple just pulls the drape off of the new Matter support and goes, aha, voila, look now, everything's great. But I feel like that's not going to happen. They're just going to be like, no, it's the same old thing. It's just Matter now.
Yeah. That's, it will be very intriguing to me when, so I assume when 16.1 arrives, whenever that is, iOS 16.1 and Ventura and iPadOS, whatever version that is, when all those stuff ships in the next few weeks, that is probably, I'm guessing, when the Matter stuff rolls out, because we are also hitting the point when the Matter products are starting to come out as well, because the full 1.0 version of the spec finally got finalized.
No, it's the starting gun for Matter, and then it'll take time, right? And Matter, like I said, I'm choosing to be optimistic about Matter because it feels like it is a spec put together by not only the major players, but also with an understanding of what the issues are.
Right.
That didn't exist when they were building all their initial things, right? They were figuring it out as they went along. And the possibility for devices to talk to each other is exciting, right? Because it allows you to not have the home hub have to schedule, have to look for one thing and then tell another thing what to do. You can theoretically say, hey, door sensor, or hey, lock, when you see the door sensor do this thing, and then the lock and the door sensor talk, right? And like they talk to each other, and that's it.
Which is how it should work, because you don't need, if you don't need to add a middleman to like intermediate that solves a lot of problems.
Right. But whether they're going to be capable of that, I don't know. I wrote a link post this week about how Google, a participant in this strategy of Matter, has refused to commit to having their high-end Nest thermostat, the Nest learning thermostat, work with Matter. And they said, yes, it's got a Thread radio in it, but that's enough. And like, I get that that you're trying to add a new software feature essentially to a limited piece of hardware. But what kills me is that their cheap plastic Nest thermostat does support it. But their more expensive, nice Nest learning thermostat with the metal ring and all of that, they're like, nah, I don't know if we're going to be able to do it. And it's like, I have one of those. I would buy a new one if they said it's the third, because I think I have the second generation. If the third generation supports Matter, I'd be like, great, then I can get that. I don't need to use Homebridge anymore. It'll just, HomeKit will see it. It'll work with all my stuff. That'd be great. And then I tried to pin down, like, does it really do that for the new model, the third generation model? And it's like, no, it doesn't. But their cheap plastic one that, by the way, I did a little side rant about this. I was standing in a place in San Diego this summer that had one of these cheap Nest thermostats, and it's terrible. It's round like a Nest, but like, the interface is different. It's got like a weird plastic thing on the side with a button and a space where you can swipe your finger, and you basically have to like swipe up and down or click. And that's, and the whole, what's great about the Nest is that one, it looks nice, it's metal, and two, that the interface is that you spin the wheel, basically, that it's got that round thing that you click or turn. And I literally thought that the thermostat in the San Diego place was a knockoff.
Yeah.
It's like a Nest, but it's not. And then I was like, well, I don't know how to use. I literally couldn't figure out how to use it. And so I searched, and it turns out, oh, it is a Nest. It's just the cheapo Nest that Google makes now. That anyway, that one will support Matter. And if there's anything that's going to get me to switch to Ecobee, I suppose it's this, right? Because I don't like the look of Ecobee and the fact that it's just a big touch interface. I really like how tactile and pretty the Nest is. But, you know, as Matter rolls out here, my patience for having things run like jankily through Homebridge is going to vanish.
Sure. Yeah, I've got an Ecobee, which we put in when we redid the heating system in the house. And it's mostly fine because it's in a room where I actually don't see it very much. so I don't adjust it very much either. Like, it's set up to do its automatic, you know, adjusting the heat and the schedule's on. So very rarely do I interact with it directly. Yeah. And it does play nicely with HomeKit and shows up in the Home app and all that. So, like, that is definitely a mark in its favor.
Yeah. They do have a fancy model now that costs what the Nest Learning thermostat costs and has some metal, like some stainless steel on it, and looks nice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and it's got a bigger screen. And if I buy one, that'll be the one I buy. But it still, in the end, is a round rect with an app inside it.
Yep.
Essentially, that's what it is. And I really like if I want it to be a little warmer with the Nest, I literally take the ring and I turn it and the temperature goes up. It's really nice. Like,
no,
it's
clever.
A really nice idea. And yet, you know, here we are. So
I laugh because I remember, I'm sure as you know, you had, when I was growing up, the thermostat in our room was like, in our living room was like, the crazy little analog ones, right? Where it was like, I remember it was programmable. I mentioned this aside in my HomeKit piece about the light timer that we had growing up with the analog one. It has all these like pins on it and you had to press them down. I actually had one of those for a little while before smart home stuff became a thing. But we had a thermostat that was very similar to that, where it had like a little dial. You opened up the front and it had a little dial in it and you had to like readjust it. My dad, it was like a weird like black magic ritual every 6 months when my dad would go in and like figure out how to readjust it for the coming season or whatever. And I just remember it being so terrible.
Ours,
I mean, I eventually got a programmable one, but like it was like when I was well out of the house.
I was not supposed to touch ours. It was one that was a rectangular, and at the top of it there were two plastic pins, and the temperature range was in a little clear plastic window, and so you'd move the pin for the heat up and down, and the pin for the cold up and down, and you would set basically the heating temp and the cooling temp, and that's how that worked. It was very primitive, but yeah. And now I only have heat. Actually, that's a thing that I was thinking. This is super limited, but what I really would like, and maybe Matter could do this, or maybe some thermostat will do this eventually, but like in the summer I have a window unit, and it's a smart window unit too, right? It's also a smart appliance. And I thought, well, you know what I really would like to do is have a smart thermostat that knows that I have a central heating unit and an air conditioner in the window. And control it all from the thermostat. But it doesn't do that.
Right.
Nobody will do that, right? Yeah, like, I'd love to be able to say, oh, no, that's your cooling system now.
Yeah.
And you know what the temperature is over there, and you know to turn it on and off, but I want to do it from my central, controller here.
Right.
And it doesn't do that. So.
Well, this is what we were kind of, we were trying to do this a little bit with the, we have the reason I was doing this temperature setting for my kids' room was it gets cold in there and we usually have the heat go down. I don't want to heat the whole house overnight, but he definitely seems to sleep better when it's warm. So we bought you can buy a baby safe space heater basically. And I was like, well, it'd be cool if I could automate this and have it turn on. Cause like, it's just a basic one where it has like a dial that goes like 1 to 7. And it's like, well, okay, we can spend a while trying to figure out what the right level is, but it'd also be cool if you could just have it flip on when it's, you know, hits a certain temperature threshold and then turn off again. That seems to be maybe not also recommended with a smart plug. So maybe we didn't end up going in this direction, but like it did send me down this whole path of doing this. And yeah, I don't know. We're looking at putting in a heat pump for our house. And so then this will be really interesting because not only will it do cooling, but it will do heating down to a certain threshold. And the Ecobee, I think, can handle that, like a dual fuel system, essentially.
Right.
But I am fascinated to see how that actually ends up working in practice, because it does go for something very simple, right? Where it's like, we have a furnace. Turn it on, turn it off when it gets to a certain level.
Same.
And so now having an additional piece in there will be kind of intriguing. But I do appreciate Ecobee. Like, we have I bought a bunch of the like external sensors,
right,
that are the little things. And so I have them in all, like one in my office and one in each of the bedrooms and one downstairs. And it's great because it does say like at night, only worry about the temperature in the bedrooms, right? Like you can make all your decisions based on that. And then during the day, you can decide about the rest of the house, et cetera, which is, again, huge improvement over where we used to be.
No, it's that's good. It's the, so you're if you're just tuning in, you're listening to This Old Home Kit with Jason and Dan. We're the frickin' frack of home automation.
Bob and Norm, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it would be Bob and Norm, right?
Yeah. Mainly Norm. I mean,
yeah, but Bob was the classic. But it's classic. This old house is Bob.
I know. Right? I gotta say, this is totally off topic, but since we live in the area, it's obviously us. Where that's produced,
yes,
the Norm just is about to retire, I think, or something, and like they were doing a bunch of stuff. We're like, oh, we're having a special with like the best of Norm and stuff, because Norm has now been on that show for like way longer, I think, than Bob was even on it. So yeah.
Oh yeah, but Bob just you know, he started it.
He's Bob. And
anyway, it's in the Discord, and you can listen live, by the way, if you are up at noon Eastern on Fridays, which is 9 a.m., which is why I say if you're up. You can listen in the Discord if you are a member at the More Colors or Backstage level. You can listen live, and Karen Healy's in there, and he was saying, this is why I am not doing smart home things. And what I said, and I'll just repeat here, is a lot of smart home stuff is really solid these days. The problem is that people like us are always pushing toward the edge. I'm like, but it could be smarter. And that is where you fall over the edge. So like the Lutron, just to be clear, the Lutron
Caseta. The smart home world is flat, Jason, if you go too far.
The Lutron Caseta stuff is rock solid. I have not had any problems with it at all. So that stuff is really great. It's just
I wish it didn't require a hub, but yeah
it's, I know.
And I think they are doing Thread versions. I thought I just saw one that they were starting to do that. Or maybe, you know, Matter may make a difference there too, but it works really great right now.
Honest, given, I mean, I don't love that it has a hub, but given that I just literally plugged it in and have never had to deal with it again.
Sure.
It's that's
agreed.
That
is too. I have literally never touched anything with that.
No.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
The Hue lights I have, and they're pretty solid. But yeah, having the, and I have that thing I wrote up a while back, the Aurora, that lets you, goes over the switch and lets you control. I have that in my office that looks like the little fake dimmer switch that controls Hue lights. So that's great. Hue loves.
The hubs, I mean, I hate having lots of them is the problem, because I do think that they contribute to the stability of the, right? That's like, well, no, we have a dedicated thing that uses our own radio thing. That's what they're trying to get away from with Thread, right? Is that if everybody agrees we're going to use Thread radios from now on, because for people who don't know, like there's Wi-Fi, but there's also Thread, which is a different radio technology that is basically dedicated to various smart home devices talking to each other and the network. And there's a lot of advantages to that. And if you have one of those things that you plug in that's a little hub for your light bulbs or whatever, that's what they're essentially doing. It may not be Thread, but it's that idea.
Zigbee,
yeah. It's its own little radio thing attached to your network, and then it talks to the stuff using a different radio signal, because Wi-Fi is not good for battery life, among other things, and stability can be an issue, and there's lots of reasons. So with Matter, they're trying to standardize on Thread so that everybody will just use this one technology for that. You can use Wi-Fi or you can use Thread, but that should eliminate the need for a lot of the kind of like standalone hubs. But the standalone hubs have, I think it's true, the ones, as annoying as it is for me to have two of these little plastic things attached to an Ethernet cable somewhere in my house, I do think it makes them much more stable.
It's true. Yeah. I agree. I just wish you need to, having them, I have them in my office, they're all attached to the same switch and like, you know, running off the, because they got to be connected to Ethernet and they all need power and all that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just annoying. It's just annoying to have all that extra hardware sitting around.
I know, they're little barnacles on the side of my smart home. That's right. Let's see. Well, no Apple announcements this week to speak of.
No.
I mean, other than that they're doing more, they're extending their like WWDC Slack Q&A with developer or with developer relations and engineers and stuff, which is great.
Apple.
It's like that's nice. Ask Apple. Yeah, they extended that. And that's like, I feel like the WWDC stuff was a proof of concept, and now they're going to kind of roll that out throughout the year, which is great. But other than that, like, we didn't get any Apple announcements or even Apple, event invitations or anything like that. So Unclear. We still could next week.
Do you think, here, let me ask you a question. I mean, do you think if Apple were just doing something where it's like, let's show a video, do you think they still feel beholden to give like the 1 week heads up? I mean, I guess it's good for them public PR wise, right? Because everybody starts talking about it and builds buzz, but like they don't have to. They could hey, tomorrow we're going to have an announcement or something. I mean, Nintendo does that. Nintendo does like a, oh, we're going to have a Nintendo YouTube thing tomorrow. Enjoy.
So I wrote about this at Macworld this week, which is trying to figure out what post the, you know, post lockdown, what is the model for the different levels of Apple event? And like, obviously number one is WWDC and iPhone. Okay. And I had like number four level is it's just a press release, but what about in between? I put down two levels. I'm not sure whether there are two levels or not. But the idea here is, in the old days, there were two levels there. One level was we do a little event, and then they do the briefings and the products come out. And then number three, the other one was there's no event. It is just a press release, but the real news is broken by a bunch of people who were put under an embargo.
Sure.
And this is my question, and I don't have an answer to it. I think it's a fascinating question, which is, why wouldn't you do a video, right? Like, even if it's, not, like, what is the level where you're like, it's not even worth us saying we're going to do a video tomorrow.
Right.
Or next week. We're just going to have a bunch of press releases and embargoes and stuff. Like, and I'm of the opinion now, why wouldn't you do a video? The answer is, you know, there's no good reason not to do a video. That even if it's just some Mac speed bumps and some iPad speed bumps, why is that not? I mean, even if it's a half an hour, you don't have to turn on the hype machine. And I think that goes to your point, is like, what if they did someday, they were like, tomorrow we're going to make some announcements. We're not really inviting the press, and they're like not overselling it, because you risk people not wanting to tune in, but you do have the power to get them to tune in. So I don't have an answer here. I know that if I was in the room making the argument, I would say, why would we not do videos? Because I think it's better for Apple to not have people like me breaking their product news, because I'm going to put my filthy opinions in there, right? And it's better for Apple to have it be pristine, just kind of like Apple PR marketing savvy, because they're really good at that. So I don't know. And this is a good question, because this event feels like one of those events, or this non-event feels like one of those, where we've had like the fall events, like the one in Brooklyn that was like a real event, and we've had the ones like the one in 2019, right before the pandemic, where there was no event, but they invited a bunch of press to see the new MacBook Pro. Right. And that I would call those level two and level three. But like post Apple learning how to make videos during the pandemic, I don't know if two and three still exist and where the line is drawn. So that's the big mystery for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, we made this point before, but it's like, you know what? Nobody reads, except for us, nobody reads Apple Newsroom, right? Like that's there for the press. It's not like, I mean, I was this nerd probably, you know, 15, 20 years ago before I started actually even covering it, where it's like, oh, I'll read the Apple site, you know, like sort of the PR releases and whatever.
RSS
like,
feed,
sign most me up. People don't do this. So of course you want to do a video, because at that point, at least you are appealing to the consumer. And like you said, it's a great opportunity for you to give out your message and tell the story. And this is Apple. This is Apple, a company that specializes in telling stories about its products.
Right.
And it wants to tell the story that it wants to tell.
Exactly.
So I think, given what's out there and what seems to be rumored, it would be very surprising to me if they didn't do some sort of video.
Also just post the video and say, oh, we announced new laptops. Here's the video.
I do think they want a little bit of buzz building or you know, it's like releasing a trailer, right? Like you want to get people to think about it. So I would say, I wouldn't be surprised if they decided at some point, like, hey, if we're not inviting people to this event, we don't need to do a week, but we could do a day or two, like, you know, and say like, oh, hey, later this week we'll be releasing a video, and
tomorrow
they can brief people on the side or whatever, and it'd be fine.
Tomorrow at 10 a.m. we've got some news to share about Mac and iPad.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, you can handle it in parallel, like you said, with, you know, informing the members of the press you need to inform, and that gets you that ability and gets the ability to get hardware into people's hands if there's new hardware, but it also doesn't turn it into a, like, you know, we have to create a whole, I don't know, event out of it. So I don't know, but I mean, everybody seems in agreement that at least something is coming in the next, by the end of the month, probably.
Yeah.
But I guess we're down to either next week or the week after. So yeah, we'll see. And I'm still, I need a Mac mini, Jason. So
I know,
this would be great. Let's do this.
It's time. It's Operation Get Dan a Mac mini.
That's right.
Well, maybe a week from now, we'll know what the heck is going on. And maybe we won't. But maybe.
Those are the options.
Yes, I think it's definitely one of the other. Sports writer I like, Joe Posnanski, has been writing these no BS baseball playoff previews. And what I like about them most is at the end he says, who will win? And it's like, well, one or the other.
Yes, right, exactly.
Nobody knows. That's why they play the games, as they say. So,
unprecedented tie.
Apple will announce something next week or not. You heard it here first.
That's right.
But we will check in next week.
That's right.
And find out. But and you'll already know. We probably won't break that news on the Six Colors podcast. But you never know.
That'd be great, though, wouldn't it?
But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.